turn off the metronome. And this is Class 5, Nursing Research for the Summer. We just finished our exam. And we're ready to move on with information for the day. Today's lecture is on selecting a research design. Okay, so we have learned about, how does a research idea start? Maybe from a practice question, maybe from an organization, nursing research organization that says our discipline needs research in this area. Sometimes the government says we need research in this area. It comes right out of the NIH. Your colleague may have a question from practice. You may have a personal experience, yourself, your family, that leads you to a research question. So there is some impetus for a researcher to be motivated to do research in a specific area, right? So the question comes about, okay? The next step is the literature review. What's been done in this area? Where do they look? And they truly do. If you're interested in researching a topic that you're not familiar with, that's the first thing a researcher does, is go to the literature. What science exists, right? From that, they then formulate their hypothesis or their question, correct? And write a problem purpose statement, stating the question or the hypothesis, going on and making a statement of support for the need of research in that area. And that document generally concludes with the purpose of this research is to. In many of the articles that you gave me, there was that phrase, right? And I know by this point in the semester you've read that phrase. The purpose of this research is to whatever. Okay, so now the researcher is to a point, you know how to critique all those things, don't you? You know what a good lit review looks like, I hope, or you're getting it. You know how to look at a problem purpose statement, what should be in there. You know what's applicable to nursing research and what isn't, what's testable or researchable and what isn't. We talked about that. Now the researcher has to choose a design, a structure. We also talked about theory, right, and how that fits in. We also talked about ethics. What ethically can we research? What can't we? And what goes into an IRB and getting approval to ethically do research. All right, so we've come a long way. We should. It's midterm. Okay? The next step for the researcher. The researcher truly hasn't done the IRB yet. I just kind of stuck that in because I wanted to go to my son's graduation. But the IRB usually comes after the proposal is written. Then they go to the IRB and ask for permission. So we stepped that ahead. But at this point, they have a problem purpose statement. They've done their own background. They came up with a really good question, a topic, and they feel it needs to be researched. They need to select a design. Okay, that's going to be kind of a template on how they're going to structure the research. So it's an extremely important step. Two general categories, quantitative and qualitative. Quantitative is more by the numbers. A more objective approach to science. Almost all bench science is quantitative. Physics, biology, chemistry. Okay? We're going to find the answer. We're going to test the quantum theory. We can do that with measurements of time. Medicine tends to be more quantitative. We take so many patients, we apply this medication, and we get this kind of results. If you notice, physicians will quote you percentages all the time. What are your percent of survival? Da, 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 da. That's, medicine is a much more objective, sterile discipline. Okay? And there are many, many things in nursing that are quantitative. We question nurses about the hours they worked, or nursing instructors about the hours they worked. Okay? Big thing on this campus is we nursing instructors feel we work at least half as much, again, as any other instructor on this campus. I believe that to be true. I can't make a course and give it year after year after year. Nursing is changing. It keeps changing. I keep revamping. Untrue in history, in basic science, those people write the course, they write the lectures, their syllabus never changes, on and on and on and on, right? For their entire career. Pretty easy. Okay, so if I was going to do a study and compare the amount of work that nursing professors do to other disciplines, that'd be pretty easy. It would be quantitative. I'd ask them things like, how often do they change their syllabus? I'd get numbers. I'd get hard data. But I might want to do something that's more traditionally nursing. How do you feel about having to work harder than the rest of the faculty in this? Or how do you feel about having cancer? How do you feel about the effects of this medication? What's the experience of chemotherapy? Okay? And that's qualitative. So a lot of nursing research is qualitative. And there's a definite difference, and we'll talk a little more. But the first step is to decide if your project is more applicable to qualitative or quantitative research. Sometimes people choose wrong. You'll be reading a study and you're going, this really should have just been a qualitative exploration rather than try to put hard data and numbers into this frame. It's not working. And nurses used to do that quite a bit when qualitative research did not have the status that quantitative did. Remember, we tried to be this big science. We wanted to stand up against all the other sciences. We backed off on that. We're our own science, and we've embraced that. But in the beginning, we were feeling kind of insecure. So we had to act like the big guys, you know? Now we're okay. Now we're qualitative as well as quantitative. We've embraced quantitative research in nursing, and it truly is very, very applicable. And I have to say, I was right in there. My original education was in the base science, in biology, so I was all for quantitative research. The more I got to be a nurse, the more I realized, no, we're a much more sensitive, people-oriented discipline, and you can't put numbers on all of it. So that's the first step. Is it going to be qualitative? And I told you the story about the senior that came to me with her project that was like falling apart because she was trying to make it quantitative when it was a beautiful qualitative study and she just kind of made it qualitative. So quantitative is directed at the discovery of the relationship of cause and effect. Okay? This causes this. All right? Measurement and analysis of the causal effect between variables at a particular point in time. Okay? An inquiry is within a valued-free context. So we really don't care in quantitative analysis what anybody feels about anything. We just want to see the numbers. What is the outcome? Did you survive cancer? We don't really want to hear what you went through. Did you survive it? Qualitative is very different. It's directed at discovering the meaning rather than the cause and effect. So you want to get the meaning out of something. Use a lot of language and concepts and words rather than numbers. And a few of you gave me absolutely beautiful qualitative reports of research in that stack you did from last week. Last week? Week before? That Wednesday. You did it on your own. Excellent. Really nice. I was very impressed. Qualitative, we use words. We don't use numbers. We describe. Okay, we interview people. It's value-laden. Okay? Often the research can place value on it. The qualitative design has an emphasis on the process and the meaning in context. Okay? In context. What's your experience of being taking a summer class, a required nursing course in the summer? What's the experience of that versus the experience of it when you're also taking peds and maternity? And we might really want to look at that. That would be a very interesting senior project, and it would be qualitative. Let's interview a few people who did both and kind of compare their experiences. That's qualitative. Now, if we also wanted to put their grades in, that would be quantitative, wouldn't it? Or the amount of work required in each of the courses. Now we're talking, or the hours put in. Now it's quantitative. We could do a quantitative comparison. Remember, you can have all three types. That's called triangulation or a mixed method study. So that would actually be a very interesting senior project as a group project. Have someone do a qualitative arm, someone do a quantitative arm, put it together and see what kind of results you got on something like that, like the effect of taking nursing. And maybe you make it so I could always teach in research in the summer. We wouldn't have to have a petition and go through all the heartache we went through this to get this course. Something like that. So triangulation works too. It doesn't have to, a study doesn't necessarily have to be either or. The segments of the study are separated, but they can also come together to support a conclusion, to support an answer to the question. So the focus of qualitative design is on social experience. From the experience emerges meaning. So if we were to ask you about your experience and compare that with the experience of students taking this course with PEDS and maternity, you would discuss your experience. From that, we may glean that it's very important to give this course in the summer. Look what students get out of it. They can concentrate on it. They don't have any distractions. It's a little lighter course. It works real well. And they learn more because they don't have the pressure, time pressure from PEDS and maternity, for example. Or we may find that it doesn't matter. And they're you know, busy going off and traveling all over the world. They don't pay enough attention to this course anyway, as they would to PEDS. I don't know. And that is something that could certainly be researched. Now, there's something else very interesting about qualitative design. There is a relationship between the participant, the study subject, and we're going to talk about choosing study subjects next week, and the researcher. And qualitative, they're just numbers. There's no relationship. In qualitative, there's a relationship. For instance, people have gone undercover and a research reporter and sat in on they've infiltrated different parts of society to write about it, right? Nurses have done the same thing. I have a friend that wanted to learn about the health practices of the Amish. She went and lived with them for 6 weeks. Okay, completely immersed them. She is still friends with those people. So that's what we do. On the breast cancer study I worked on, the breast cancer survivor lymphedema study, we sent birthday cards to the participants. We had a real relationship with the ladies. We followed them through treatment. We saw them every 3 weeks. It was a big deal. So we developed a relationship. And qualitative work, that's absolutely acceptable. This study we were doing was triangulated. I was part of the quantitative arm, and I measured arms. That's all I did. But the other researchers were talking to them about their experience and da da da, and they seemed to have much more fun than I did just measuring arms. So there is a relationship, because I had to really concentrate to measure arms. So I'd be measuring the circumference of arms because we were comparing lymphedema and diagnosis and all. And then there'd be another nurse talking to them about their experiences and how they're feeling, and I couldn't really concentrate much on what they were saying because I had to really concentrate on these measurements, and I was just really jealous they were enjoying it. Okay, so quantitative is extremely applicable to nursing. Qualitative is extremely applicable to nursing. We get into it. We have a relationship. Environmental issues may shape inquiry, pattern, and frequency. How did we feel about not having any sunshine in summer till now? Did it make you take this course more seriously? Maybe it did. I don't know. Did it afford more study time? Maybe. We haven't been able to go out. It's still not warm enough to go out and sit on the lawn like we did last summer. We can do our little exercises. That was really fun. So did environmental issues take away? What about what's happening this last semester in our department? We've had lots of changes. Is that affecting your education? That would be an interesting environmental issue to look at. That would be another great senior project. Are the changes... does change in general affect the student? And how much does higher level department change affect the morale of a nursing student? And the students were saying, we're not comfortable. There's a lot of change going on and we feel a little uncomfortable. Yeah, justifiably so. How's that going to affect the outcome? That kind of thing. What is the environment that shapes what's going on? So nature of reality. Reality in terms of, in objective terms. Okay? That's what quantitative is all about. Reality is objective. Black and white, we don't have any mushy gray in the middle. This is the way it is, period. Black or white. There is one single reality. Okay? There's no, well, it's kind of like this. No. This is the way it is, period. That's it. Parts can be separated and manipulated. Okay? We can take this part, play with that a little bit, take that part, play with that chemical a little bit. Doesn't necessarily affect each other, because the variables are independent. context-free and objective. The researcher isn't going to put their feelings on the study. That's not a part of it. That's not appropriate and quantitative. A scientist isn't going to say, I like green better, so I'm going to go with the, I have stronger feelings about this compound than I did this compound because it's green. That's not going to happen in quantitative, okay? And the research is narrow. It's narrow in focus. Versus qualitative, if nothing is known about a certain topic, and some of you have come up with interesting topics and haven't found anything written about them or any research done because there isn't any. That's not uncommon in nursing. We're still new. There's a lot of nursing questions that haven't been answered. So if you're going to start a career, a line of research on a topic, you generally start with qualitative. Let's look broad in scope, not narrow. Let's just broadly explore the phenomenon of change in curriculum in nursing students. Okay, let's just broadly explore that. Okay, or the weather on a summer course. Okay, so it's broad in scope. Social construct of reality. Reality isn't black and white, it's whatever we say it is as a society. A society of nursing students, a society of whatever you choose. Cancer survivors, anything. If someone's interested in oncology and pediatrics, yeah, that population, that environment, what's it like? Nurses working 12-hour shifts, that's a society in itself, a culture. People working at night. So for qualitative, there's multiple realities. It's not just black and white. There's not a single reality. We accept lots of different ideas. And parts are allowed to be interrelated. They're not separate. Death, something can affect this. You can have a lot of overlap with dependent variables. Variables dependent upon each other. Context is interrelated and subjective. So a researcher can truly put their spin on it. Very subjective. What do you think about this? We're asking the subjects how they think and feel. Very different than, this is it. These are the numbers. This is it. This is your blood work. No, that's what we're taking. It's almost like when you're working with a dog, someone was interested in pet therapy, you can't really ask the dog how they're feeling about their interaction with a human. So you ask the human, how do you feel about your interaction with the dog? And that's qualitative. The work with the dog has to be quantitative because we can take a blood sample from the dog and look at and see what kind of chemicals are in it that show endorphins, that show the dog's having a good time and enjoying the interaction. So the dog, if you're going to analyze dogs and people and their interaction, you'd have to do dogs quantitatively since they're not really good at describing after the fact that it was a good experience, right? So we're going to look at them quantitatively. But we can say to the patient, how was that experience with the dog? And they could qualitatively tell you, okay? Dogs are really good at nonverbal communication at the time. They're not too good with recall. You know, they're not going to be able to tell you an hour ago how that was a great experience. But their blood will still have the endorphins in their system, okay? So that's that would have to be quantitative, where asking the person about the experience would be qualitative. Human data is collected and is objective. That's quantitative. The human is made up of parts. That's it. We're all different parts. Whereas qualitative is subjective. And it's holistic. You take in consideration everything that's affecting the results. So sources of knowledge are a little different. Logical positivism and empiricism is quantitative. What is the empiric answer? Exactly what's it going to be? Observation is used in quantitative. We can measure how quickly that wound healed. We can measure healing time. We can measure how fast the bone grew back. We can measure these things. We observe. Okay, my son had a broken wrist, and it was very important that his wrist heal. And he was using all this stuff. Amazing, it healed in like a month. He was using all this, I don't know, some kind of a vibrating treatment or whatever. Yeah, you can measure that through observation, how well that one healed. Psychological and biophysical facts. Okay, we can take some psychological issues, like a diagnosis of depression, and we can quantify it, right? And we can test it. That works if we break it down. The research tradition in qualitative is anthropology, social psychology, philosophy, okay? The soft science is a qualitative research tradition. Intuition, gestalt, all those kinds of up there, not quite so hard and fast concepts. Social interactions, value cultures all come into play. So I think you're getting a real strong view of the difference between the two, and you'll be all set through the little quiz we're having on Friday. Quantitative, we're going to produce an outcome. We want an answer to the question, period. Yeah?
A few slides back, you said that for quantitative, the variables are independent of each other.
Yeah, they're independent of each other. So we're not going to say, how did the fact that your mother died this semester affect your outcome in this course? We're just going to look at your grades. Okay? So that's an independent. Whether if I was asking you about your experience of this course and you said, I couldn't even deal with the course because my mother died this summer, then it would be completely different, right?
So there's not an independent
variable? There is an independent and dependent variable, but they're kept completely separate. Okay, we're not going to talk about we're going to talk about how one manipulates the other, definitely. But we're not going to take into effect the context, what else was going on, putting everything together. And looking at it a broader, more objective. Just exactly what happened in that step. What grades you're doing, it's all that matters. Okay? Not the environment that you're in. Qualitative, process, phenomena, person-oriented. That's pretty obvious. We're much more concerned about the process than the product. In fact, as you learn a little more about qualitative research stops when the information coming in starts repeating itself. That's when we know it's done. You may need 30 people, you may need 4. When you start hearing the same answers repeated, then we're going to call it truth and move on. Whereas in quantitative, generally the more numbers the better. They're going to support the data, right? They're going to support the analysis to get your findings. So what's a research design? It's a flexible set of guidelines by which a researcher obtains answers to inquiries. What's the process we're going to go through to get the answer to that research question? Suggests approach for observation analysis, but it does not tell the researcher exactly what to do. It simply tells guides in the approach. Qualitative, we're going to be a little more holistic. We're going to be subjective. We're going to ask people how they feel. So some questions will be more applicable to that. Or we're going to measure test scores, all right? Very objective, very data-driven. And that will be generally pretty obvious from the question. A researcher should choose either qualitative or quantitative, depending on what their research question is. It's a general, non-specific approach to a specific study or precise questions. So in quantitative, we want a comprehensive level of knowledge of a phenomenon. We want to learn all about how grass grows, okay? The measurement of concept evidence, we're very precise in the measurement. Usually not much description. How tall is the grass? How fast is it growing with all this rain? We're going to have measurements. How many days it rained versus how tall the grass grew. We're not talking about how the grass feels about growing. We don't care. Okay, I'm not going to do a little, wine and cheese and ask a group of grass how they feel about the extra rain they got. And is it nice that the hills are turning green again? Are we going to get a second crop of wheat around here? It almost looks like it. Yeah, we're not doing that. How much are you growing versus how much water you get? Qualitative, generally less is known about the phenomenon with qualitative. It's kind of an exploration. We want to know what we need to explore. And that's why it's been so applicable to nursing, because nursing hasn't had any science, evidence-based, true science, until what? How many years now? 30, 40, that's all. So it was appropriate to start out many studies with qualitative analysis. There's no measurements of concepts, we don't measure, but we get rich description. Tell us about the experience of growing with all this rain this summer. It must have been wonderful. We're not going to measure. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. You only grow a half inch, you grew 2 inches. No, because tell us about that. How wonderful. I'm sorry you were under the tree and didn't get the benefits. But let me tell you about this guy over here with the sun. It was wonderful, okay? That's the kind of thing. It's rich versus numbers. Characteristics of a research design, the research proposal and goal. Okay. So quantitative studies, the purpose are to develop an explanation and a prediction from facts. Facts, 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 right? Objectives, subjects, cases, that kind of thing. Quantitative types of data is sought. Objective, exclusive. Don't tell me they can sometimes be that way, but it's usually this way, but it's kind of gray now. Black and white. Qualitative, we're developing an understanding and meaning. Tell us about the meaning. What is it like? We focus on participants, information, other people. Okay? Subjective. Sometimes there's a little objective, but inclusive. Everything's included. We don't just take one aspect. We're going to look at everything. Very holistic. So the concepts of structure and control are important. Remember the term rigor we had at the very beginning of this semester? You may at first think that, well, how can you have rigor in qualitative design? How can you do that? We're going to talk a little more about qualitative design. You can. You can. Now, in quantitative, control is very important. Everything controlled, right? That would support rigor in quantitative. I've controlled for barometric pressure. I've controlled for sunlight. I've controlled for all these things in my study. I've measured the variables, okay? I've ruled out all alternative explanations, and I've controlled all error, and I have a true experimental design. Now, a true experimental design is where the environment is tightly controlled, very, very tightly controlled. That's why it's so difficult, if not impossible, to have a true experimental design in a hospital setting. How can you possibly? It's not like you're working with rats in a laboratory where you can watch the movement of blood cells through capillaries. No, you can't do that with people. Every person is a little different. So a true experimental design where all the environment is controlled is pretty much impossible for nursing, right? Because most of our exploration is with our patients or with people who may or may not become our patients to learn about a specific phenomenon. So the environment of qualitative is uncontrolled. In quantitative, they measure the variables. Okay, we've got so much of this, so much of this, so much of this. That's it. No, qualitative is describing a phenomenon. What happened? Okay. Qualitative is inclusive, understanding the designs are exploratory. We're going to explore the experience. So there is rigor. There is control in qualitative. But it's very a different kind of control than what you're going to see in quantitative designs. What about trustworthiness of findings? That's very important. Can you trust these findings? How are you going to critique qualitative work? Quantitative is pretty easy, right? You can look at internal validity. You can link hard objectives, sustainability, internal factor indicators. You can do all that. You can look real close. Did they think about controlling temperature? Did they think about making sure that these patients all didn't have any additional comorbidities? Did they do all this? I remember one nurse that was involved in collecting data on diabetics. That research, the PI, the principal investigator of the research study, was a physician and wanted to find patients that fit such a tight criterion that there was absolutely no way that it was going to be possible. They wanted diabetics of such an age with no comorbidities, with blood sugars that ran this. It had been diagnosed for so many years, between the ages of, it was just basically impossible. But you can see why they wanted to control for as many variables as possible in order to test their intervention. And that was right. That's quantitative data. And you don't need that when it's qualitative. It's a function of the precipitance confirmation of completeness of information. Okay, so when we're doing quantitative, we're gonna rule out as many variables. We're gonna get a population that's as homeogenic as possible, right? They're the same. They're the same as much as possible. That way we can pull out the one factor that we're exploring, the one variable that we want to look at, the response to a specific diabetic medication, for instance. Now, how we test the trustworthiness of qualitative design, we often talk to people, we get their perceptions, and then we go back to them and we say, these are my findings. This is what I understood you to say. That's called a member check. It's used a lot in qualitative design. Is this what, do you agree with how I've interpreted your statements and our interactions and what you told me about your experience? So they say, yeah, or no, or the, yes, but you have this wrong. So that's a member check. So that's one of the ways that we ensure trustworthiness of data in qualitative work. When you're reading qualitative reports of research, they should address the issue of trustworthiness. They should do member checks. They should do something to confirm that their data is accurate, that how they interpreted what their subjects were saying, the subjects were in agreement with that interpretation. And you will often read about that. We went back and discussed it with the subjects. We sent out preliminary findings to the subjects. We did this to make sure. Now, generalizability. I have it over here too. What's generalizability? Has anybody read about that yet in the text? What does generalizability mean? You know? Tip of the day, but I guess I haven't put it up yet. Generalizability means the extent to which the findings can be generalized to an entire population. Right? So, if I were to study you as a group of nursing students, could I generalize you and your nice little cohort right here to all the nursing students on this campus? Maybe. Maybe the findings would be applicable. Could I generalize and say whatever I found about you was true of all the nursing students in the Bay Area? Maybe, depending on what it was. Could I go much farther? Probably not. You know, we're social and culturally very different than other parts of the state. Could I grow that cohort very far in generalizing? Could I take this data, because it's true for you, say it's then true for a group of students in New York going to school this summer? Probably not. So generally, qualitative findings are not generalizable. That's not the aim. I don't want to discover something that's going to be true for you and then apply it to similar populations throughout the world, throughout the county. Unlike quantitative. Quantitative expects to be generalized. This is how it is. This is how it is, not just for you, but for everyone in this situation. For every piece of grass that it grows at this latitude and longitude, with this many days of sunlight, with this many days of rain, at this much, it's going to grow this much. Yeah, we could do that, right? Then we could say that's true, period, across the world, right? Because we've talked about temperature and everything, and this is how it is. So then it's generalizable. Qualitative is not generalizable. That's not the goal. What about the researcher? I mentioned that there's a relationship with the researcher. Quantitative, of course, there's little involvement. The researchers are detached. They're looking at the growth of the grass from an outsider's perspective, or the wound healing from an outsider's perspective. They don't have any real interaction. Very different in qualitative. There is a researcher-participant, observer-participant bond. They're involved. They have an insider perspective. Okay? Like you could do research, qualitative research on your class, I couldn't, right? You could get a heck of a lot more information about how you felt about this course than I ever could, couldn't you? Yeah. Okay, because you have the insider perspective. I can send you all sorts of quantitative questionnaires. They're not going to be half as meaningful as if Christine said, hey, let's go for coffee, chat about this. They'd be much richer, wouldn't it? Yeah. So quantitative, we use questionnaires. Structured interviews are considered quantitative because we can we can structure someone's response, yes, no, maybe, you know. We use psychometrically sound instruments. There are many instruments or questionnaires that have been tested that are quantitative. A lot of them in education, a lot of them in psych. The NCLEX is a perfect example. Because that's a quantitative questionnaire. How you respond to this is going to show your ability to be a safe and efficient nurse. Okay, so it's been quantified that test will determine that. You can certainly object to that, but that's what the data shows. Now, that's very different than qualitative. Qualitative, the tool, meaning the questionnaire or the measurement, whether it's a blood pressure cuff or a questionnaire, or a chart analysis in quantitative. Those are all the tools they use to collect data. We were talking about that in quantitative. Now, the tool in qualitative is the researcher. The researcher is the tool. The researcher is the one who finds out everything. The researcher is the investigator. Okay? And the researcher may use lots of different ways, observation, interviews, informal chats, to collect that data, collect their feeling for how the Amish conduct their healthcare practices, for instance. Okay? So my colleague living among the Amish used a vast variety of tools, mainly herself, to get a true feel and be able to report about the healthcare practices among that population. You think we're going to give those people a questionnaire and we get much out of it? I doubt it. You can see how rich qualitative data can be in some circumstances to answer some questions. The quantitative design is established. We're going to survey 250 Bay Area nurses and find out their feelings about complementary and alternative medical practices in their practice. Okay, we can do that. I had a graduate student who did just that. So she did. That was her thesis. She got from the BRN, she got the list of all registered nurses in the Bay Area. She designed a questionnaire regarding their use of CAM and sent it out to them, got the responses. The data fits the design. She designed to have 150 questionnaires sent. She chose every 20th nurse on her list. That was 400. Sent them out. She took the first 250 that came in. She set. So the data fits the design. Okay? She analyzed it and moved on. Okay. Qualitative, the design evolves through findings. Okay? Data drives the design. As a qualitative researcher talks to their subjects, the design of the research changes a little bit. Maybe you're talking to nurses who work 12-hour shifts, and all of a sudden the use of caffeine comes up. And that's not really something you would consider even asking about, but since every single nurse for the first three that you interviewed mentioned it, you stick it in your questions now. It's obviously important to that population, so let's include it. The data drives the design. Completely untrue and quantitative. It's set. This is what we're doing. This is a design. Qualitative, we don't want to miss anything. Remember, qualitative is much more holistic. So the researcher goes in with much less intimate knowledge and very open to having some changes in the design. And you have to be careful about that, though, because you'll start reading a qualitative work and you thought they were going to answer this question and they got way off over here and talked about caffeine consumption in nurses working nights. When that wasn't supposed to be what the study was at all. It was supposed to be night shift productivity. Okay? So you got to be careful because people tend to get off on a tangent. And watch this. They do in high-level research as well. So our next lecture will be on qualitative and quantitative design. And I think, are we leaving that for next time? Let me see. Nope. We're going to talk a little bit about it now. Do you need a break? Nope. Yes? Nina does. Nina does. Okay. Why don't we take a little break for Nina and then come back in about 10 minutes. And I'll see if I can shut this down and not blow it completely. Okay, so stop. Nina says she's ready, so we're moving on. Okay. right, part two. Class 5, talking about research and design. Okay. We talked about how we kind of verify the data. And how do we search for trustworthiness, right? And I said in qualitative work, we do what's called a member check or something along those lines. In quantitative design, we verify the data. We use prescriptive testing, okay? The tests are absolutely prescriptive. For instance, the NCLEX is prescripted. This is exactly the test. We test a hypothesis, okay? We look for correlation. Sometimes there's a little description, but not much. It varies in the amount of control over error. Quantitative design. Usually we want a great deal of control over error. So we look for... We want the error to be very small. We don't want something to have happened because of chance. We want it to happen because of our intervention. So we're going to control for that as much as we can. There may be a little variety in there. Okay, so true experimental, as we talked about, is robust, scientific, and theoretically based. There's a lot of control. This is true experimental. The measure of the concepts using valid and reliable instruments. Okay? And this is quasi-experimental as well. Manipulation of an independent variable being measured on the dependent variable. Quasi-experimental and experimental are all have both these things. All this. Okay, robust, scientific, theoretically based, significant level of control. Quasi-experimental. Okay, we talked about experimental. That's like everything controlled. In the lab, quasi-experimental is, we lessen it just a little, okay? We don't have quite as much control, but we're still based on science. There's still a significant level of control. We measure the concepts. We manipulate the variables, okay? So true experimental, there's random assignment of subjects, all right? So random, you know, we'll take this side of the room or this side of the room, absolutely random. There's no hand-picked subjects. And there's often a control group in experimental. The subjects are chosen at random, and there's usually a control group for experimental studies. Perfect example would be medication testing, right? That last phase in the process before a drug hits the market, they have subjects, right, that are inflicted with whatever ailment. The medication is supposedly cured. We randomly assign them to groups. Some get a placebo, some get the real med, and we see what happens, right? That's experimental. Now, quasi-experimental, not necessarily random assignment of subjects. Okay, so we may say, well, we want subjects that kind of, we want so many women, we want so many men, we want so many between this age group. We want to have a good mix. It's not so random. And it's not necessarily a control group. Okay. The quasi-experimental doesn't necessarily have a control group. Now, with a true experimental design, researchers tend to assess whether an intervention or a treatment, an independent variable, makes a difference in the measurable outcome, the dependent variable, correct? Designed to answer questions that test theory and causal relationships. This is an experimental design. So, experimental design, the essence, the essential elements are control, high degree of control, random assignments of subject to experimental control group, and manipulation of the independent variable to see how it affects the dependent variable. The outcome is the effect on the dependent variable. That's what we're measuring. So, we can do a pretest and a post-test. That works real well. We're going to test this group. We're going to then do our intervention, and we're going to test them again to see how the intervention changed their responses, right? That's a pre-test, post-test, okay? We test them, take a baseline, intervention, and we see how they did. You might want to take a group of smokers, okay? You might want to get... and you have them all the same comorbidities, the same age, you've got a pretty tight group, right? You test them. And then you give them your wonderful new smoking cessation intervention. And then you test them again, see how they feel about smoking. See if it changes. Okay. Now we can do a post-test only for control group. We know they all smoke, so we're just going to test them afterwards. The ones who smoked and the ones didn't. And we can do a Solomon 4, where the experiment is conducted twice, once with a pretest and once without, and that's kind of elaborate. And our quasi-experimental is like true experimental design. Again, manipulation of the independent variable, outcome is predicted by theory and research, that's all the same. But there's random assignments, and that control is generally absent. There's no control group. Random assignments, we're just going to test, and we're just going to test, see how they did. Quasi-experiments design are most common in nursing. Very rare you're going to find a true experimental design. This is because of the nature of the study, the clinical setting. As we said, it's pretty hard to control everything in a clinical setting. It's generally impossible to develop a control group. That's also very difficult. No, we're not going to give you guys the this medication or this procedure. No, I mean, we don't, because we're so focused on doing improving patient care. Random assignment may be impossible in the clinical setting. Okay. A common convenient sampling or match groups are used. So convenient sampling would be, I'll take everybody who walks in the door. So like for our breast cancer survivor work, we took every woman who walked in the door. That was it, in this specific hospital. That was our convenient sampling. Okay. Randomized clinical trials. The most widely accepted approach to evaluate the effectiveness of an intervention. We use these in medicine all the time. Randomized clinical trials for medicine. We use an experimental group and a control group, randomly assign them, blinding of patients and healthcare workers. So people don't know if they're getting the placebo, the healthcare workers don't know, nobody knows. And you need a fairly sufficient sample size. You can't do this with 50 people. The more, the better, okay? And we see it in medicine all the time. Typically, two groups, experimental and control. Each group receives an intervention, and they're assigned to each group to assure similarity in demographic characteristics that may influence the treatment and outcomes. Randomized clinic, yeah?
If you're testing a group and you do have a placebo, is it essential to let them know that one of the groups is going to receive?
No, you don't have to tell them at all. No, you don't have to divulge that. No. You can say this is a study to test a medication. That's all you have to say. And then if they ask, am I going to be receiving the medication? You can say, we don't know. Because you don't know. And then you can go on to say that there will be placebos, but you don't need to divulge that. A single-blinded study is the treatment is unknown to the patients. Yeah. Right, and I do believe that I know that in pediatric oncology, it's almost all to give everybody the drug and see what happens, because it's so needed.
Right.
So I can't say in general, universally. In general, yeah, you have a control group, and that's what a random clinical trial is. In reality, how are drugs tested? Many different ways. And I know for a fact that in pediatric oncology, almost everybody's on a clinical trial and getting the meds, because we're so anxious to advance science in that direction. So I don't think we can make any overall statement, except that this is just the definition of randomized clinical trial and how they're used and a little different. So single blind is when the healthcare workers know and the patients know who's getting the placebo. Double blind, the treatment assignment is unknown to patients and everybody. And again, sample size is very important. The best form of evidence, and therefore the gold standard of clinical research, is considered the randomized clinical trial. Okay, that's considered the best. So even though we might give all these drugs to an oncology population because we feel so strongly that anything is going to be better than doing nothing for these children, that's not going to be then the very best evidence of the effect. If we could have children that were done, it would be a better. Do we do it in? No, not always. Okay. Not all clinical researchable questions can be answered through randomized trials, so, of course. So there's non-experimental designs, and there are that are descriptive designs meant to just gather information about conditions, attitude, characteristics. Purpose is to gather meaning of the phenomenon at a specific time and explore relationships among the phenomena. The knowledge needs refinement. The independent variable is not manipulated. The investigated the relationship between two or more variables, like coffee drinking and working 12-hour shifts. Right? Describes a relationship, predicts relationships, tests relationships. What's the relationship between coffee drinking and a sleep deprivation of nurses at work nights? Something like that. Can be retrospective, can be prospective. Okay. Non-experimental designs describe correlate. They're descriptive, can be descriptive correlational designs. We want to describe the relationship. What is the relationship between coffee and efficiency of night nurses? Exploratory. May examine success of a given treatment against time. Will nurses who just started drinking coffee respond differently than nurses who've been drinking coffee for 10 years? Maybe prospective or retrospective. We can look back. How do you feel about this 10 years ago? How do you feel about it now? We can look in the charts. How many errors were made compared to now? Okay. All right. Next lecture is going to be on qualitative design, which is not happening today. So now I bet you would like to do some exercises and play with all this newfound information, right? Much more fun than having me talk at you.